show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. We got some things happening, folks. If you remember last week, we made some predictions or just threw out some possible ideas. Some of those things didn't happen. Some of those, we'll go over everything that has happened here in a minute. But first, introductions, of course. I'm Jeff Herr, and with me is the man whom I can neither confirm nor deny has ever written an anonymous op-ed for the New York Times, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very rainy evening here in Kansas City?
It's just rained for like 2 weeks. Like,
yeah, it's pretty gross.
All but like 3 days, and then it gets like 90 degrees, and then it's like, it's
and of course, gross. Because of all the rain, it's like super humid, so you walk out and it's all soupy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to a little Labor Day cookout thing on Monday, and like, it was just, you know, we're out on my friend's patio, and it's just hot. It's just gross. It's like, blah, don't want it. But I guess the rain is good, you know.
I suppose so.
Yeah. So in general, yeah, other than, you know, sweating a lot on Labor Day, I'm pretty good.
Indeed. So
fun detail for all the listeners at home.
There you go. It's the sweating habits of our hosts here.
Yeah.
So we'll dive right in here. Big news of the week, I suppose, if you can call it that. If there's any big news for a team where the Royals are right now, but big news for the future of the Royals, not necessarily positive big news, is Danny Duffy has been shut down with a shoulder injury for the rest of the season. Now, he probably would only get, you know, three or four more starts the rest of the way. I'm not sure exactly how many he was scheduled to get, but it's a little concerning. Obviously, anytime it's concerning if someone goes to the DL with an injury, but apparently, according to Danny Duffy, it's a left shoulder injury, obviously his pitching shoulder. So, you know, it had been going on for a while, and he tried to kind of muscle through it, if you will, quote unquote. And that was not a quote from him, but that's a quote from me. but he tried to play through it, and it just wasn't working. So they finally got to the point where they just shut him down. So his season is over and done with. And it ends very disappointingly. He has a 4.88 ERA, which is the worst he's had since his rookie season. He has pitched for 155 innings, which sadly enough is good for the second most in his career, behind 2016 when he had 179.2 innings. So, you know, that question, and it's been kind of a common theme the last few years for our predictions, over unders, etc., that how many innings Danny Duffy will have. And that's been the big thing for him. Can he work for a full season? Can he be that guy for an entire season as a starter? You know, he's never started more than 28 games in a season, and that was this season. So I don't know what this portends for the future of Danny Duffy in Kansas City. You know, obviously his future is here, and there was possible talk, I guess, you know, that the Royals had publicly said or anything, but people were kind of speculating perhaps they'd be looking to trade Danny Duffy in the offseason. And of course, he gets injured, and now not only would you have to deal with a bad season, but you'd have to deal with trading an injured player, which that rarely ever happens. So the idea that Danny Duffy is going to be around for a while is a reality. And what does this mean for his future? And who knows? We don't really know the extent of the injury. We don't know why he allowed him to keep pitching. You know, was this something where, because Danny Duffy, he's one of those guys, you know, if you tell him to run headfirst through a brick wall, he's going to do it if it'll make him a better baseball player. He's got that type of fire in him. He's kind of similar to Salvador Perez in that way. If you tell him he can play, he will play. And, you know, that's just the spirit and the fire. And that's why a lot of people like Danny Duffy so much. That said, sometimes teams have to save players from themselves. Sometimes teams have to step in and say, hey, you could technically play with your injury the way it is, but we need you more in the long run to be healthy and to not have any lingering effects of this. So we're going to sit you down, specifically in a season like the Royals are having now, which Danny Duffy starting an extra 10 games or not, it's not going to matter. It didn't matter.
Right.
It wouldn't have mattered. It won't matter. So it's a little perplexing exactly how they got themselves into this situation when you hear that it's been bothering him for a while. I don't know. It's a rough situation. It's unfortunate for Danny Duffy that he doesn't get to go, you know, full season. He could have, he would have come close to having a career high, getting across that 180 inning pitch threshold, but that won't happen. And now those questions are going to remain, and he's going to be 30 next year. And he's basically never pitched a full season as a starter. So I don't know what this means. I don't know what to take away from this. And I don't know how this makes me feel about Danny Duffy's future. It's certainly not positive, but I don't know exactly how negative this makes me feel about Danny Duffy moving forward. I mean, how do you feel when hearing about all this?
Well, and you know, he's had so many different things over the years that have limited him, pitch count or, you know, just the bad innings, short outings. So yeah, that question's going to remain. Can he ever be a 200 inning pitcher? And that was one of the goals for this year. And then, you know, it was at the end of spring training, we saw velocity drop and we saw, you know, he had some shoulder issues then, it was cited. So starting even in March, this was kind of a thing. And then he went on the disabled list in August. He only missed, I think, one start the way they worked it out. But now, yeah, the time, you know, if he's still having the issue and his velocity was down yesterday, I think it was yesterday when he pitched and they pulled him. I mean, that's kind of where they're at. It's, you know, there's no reason to push him this year. It's a shoulder impingement, which is, I guess, just, you know, kind of a overwork of the tendons in the shoulder. It's common. It's not any kind of like a tear. It's not like a torn rotator cuff or a labrum or anything, but, you know, it's a, you know, it's impacting the way he can throw. And you know, when your job compels you to throw, you know, 300 pitches twice a week or so, you know, over or 300 pitches a week, give or take, you know, with warm-ups and, you know, your work and two starts a week and all that, yeah, that's a lot, you know. And so yeah, shut him down now, that's fine. Long term, I don't know. I mean, the Royals got a lot of offers last winter on Duffy. Last December, there was a lot of interest in him. The Royals obviously did not trade him. Now he's going in a season where he struggled, where he was injured a couple of different times. He's had Tommy John surgery already. Not that that's, you know, anything happening here, but, you know, that's on his resume. And so when you look at a guy who's turning 30, has not pitched 200 innings, he's owed $46 million over the next 3 years on his contract. It's not a very tradable asset, frankly. So the Royals are probably not going to find a taker unless they eat some of that contract. And they're probably not really interested in doing that. I mean, if he gets rest and maybe builds up some arm strength over the offseason, he'll probably be fine. I mean, you know, in 3 months, he'll probably be back to full strength and able to resume normal activities. And, you know, not really that much worse for the wear. But, you know, anytime you're in the shoulder, that can be a problem. The elbow is, I won't say figured out, but there's really generally like one thing that happens in the elbow, and they figured out a way to fix it pretty routinely. The shoulder is a little less certain in a lot of respects. And so, you know, at least now they're shutting him down. It's not becoming a, you know, a bigger thing the rest of the season, but yeah, it is. It is troubling to kind of take a look at someone that 2 years ago looked like he was breaking out, and now it's, you know, he's not improving at all. He's falling back. So, yeah, it's troubling. That's going to be a lot of money on the books for the next couple of years. You know, you kind of just have to hope that he gets the rest and goes through whatever throwing programs and whatever rehab programs he needs to, so that he can come back and, you know, lead the staff next year. Because, you know, the Royals, they've got a lot of young arms. Duffy really needs to kind of be that guy at the top that they can rely on. And I think he'll probably be fine as long as there are no setbacks, or, you know, the trouble is not greater than it's been reported so far. So I'm not like, you know, big red flag, this is doom for Duffy, but like, it's definitely yellow flags. You know, there's definite trouble with his shoulder, and it's been recurring all year, and he needs to get the rest to get it right. And, you know, hopefully it's not something that pops up routinely going forward. So, I mean, we'll just have to see how the offseason progresses and what they kind of do to kind of work with him and make sure that he's following the protocol to get into better shape with it, to, you know, rest it properly, and kind of take care of himself so that next year it's not an issue that keeps popping up too.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's kind of what bothers me the most, you know, shoulder impingement. You know, that sounds like, okay, the doctors were like, well, we don't know what's wrong, we don't know what's causing it, but we can see you're in pain, so it's an impingement. It is impinging yeah. upon your ability to perform. So, okay, but, you know, not being able to pin it down, you know, obviously you don't want to have like a rotator cuff injury or anything like that, because those can be really serious. But at the same time, if it doesn't have to be that, you know, something where you can say, okay, this is it, this is how you fix it, this is the rehab, etc. You know, I like that a little bit more. So, I mean, it is definitely encouraging that it's probably, since they don't have anything specific, it's not something that's going to need thoracic outlet surgery or surgery to something crazy like that. So that's definitely a plus. And I do agree that he'll probably be fine. But that's the one thing when I say I talk about the future that kind of worries me, since it's just kind of something that hurts. You're like, okay, you know, hopefully it's just something that rest can handle and he can be back, but you never know with these things. But there's one thing that you mentioned that I kind of want to have an aside to discuss, if you will.
Okay.
So you talked about he's owed $46 million for the next 3 years, and it doesn't make him a very tradable asset. So is that, how true do you really feel when you say that? Because I was listening to the radio this morning, 810 on Border Patrol, and they were saying the same thing, that this, you know, contract, which was seen as team friendly at the time that it was signed, doesn't look so team friendly now, and actually might make him harder to trade because of the kind of money that he's making. But then at the same time, when, and we've talked about it for years, you know, the last 5 to 10 years, how much baseball salaries have skyrocketed. So at this point, if you have a left-handed pitcher with, granted, Duffy's got the injury history and he's coming off a bad season, but at the same time, and this isn't trying to me advocate for him being traded this offseason, just kind of a conceptual exercise, if you will, but Duffy being a left-hander, given his history, his talent level, even coming off of the bad season and being with the injury, I mean, is he really not worth the contract? You know, I mean, if you were looking as another team, do you say, okay, Danny Duffy's not worth that? You know, the injury history is probably the biggest thing where you say, well, he might not be worth it because he might not be healthy, which I totally get that. But at the same time, I don't know. It's just the kind of, I was just kind of thinking about that. because I always feel like I have to recalibrate my idea of worth when it comes to baseball, because I look at a player and I say, okay, he gives you X, X, and X, then to me, you know, that should be worth $8 million, and he ends up getting $15 million on the open market or something like that, you know? So it's just – it's kind of weird when – I mean, the Jason Vargas, perfect example. I would have never just in a vacuum trying to value baseball players appropriately. I never would have thought he'd be worth $8 million a year when he signed with the Royals. But that's what he got on the open market. You never would have thought Billy Butler was a $10 million a year player probably, but that's what he got. You know, so I don't know. Is that you really think that it looks like a bad deal now? Are we starting to get into Alex Gordon territory where it's just a really bad deal for the Royals?
I don't it's definitely not as like can't be as optimistic as when he signed it, but I wouldn't say like bad. You know, when you're talking about, you know, any more the win above replacement per $1 million, it's like $10 million per win above replacement, give or take now. And that always, that keeps going up because, well, salaries keep going up. So, you know, on that kind of frame of reference, yeah. I mean, if he's worth 1.5 wins a year, that's fairly easy to do. You can be pretty average and reach that. So yeah, I mean, he can probably meet that on that theoretical sense, but I don't know. I mean, I think a team taking him on, you know, they know right away that's, you know, $46 million they got to take on. You know, and if they're not like a strong player or you know, recent run of big success, I think it limits the return maybe if you're talking about a trade. You know, it's not that a team wouldn't take him, but because there's so much money that they would have to take on, that you're probably limiting what type of prospect you might get back if that's the way you're trying to go. You know, if you're willing to take anybody so that the team will eat the salary, well, you know, that might be relatively easy if team really feels like they want to get him, but it's not a great return for the Royals. So I don't think we're going to be looking back at it and say that it was a complete disaster. But, you know, if he has another 4.88 ERA and doesn't reach 160 innings next year, then, yeah, there's going to be a lot of grumbling. I mean, there's a lot of that when you look at Ian Kennedy's contract, he's had a really difficult year this year and has been on the DL a couple of different times, and ERA is over 5, and it's not like people were really enamored with him in the first place. So, you know, where he's got a lot of money left on his deal, you know, it ends up being that kind of thing where you have all this money tied up on these players that aren't really doing that well. And, it just kind of takes the steam out of it. That being said, that's what they got on the market. So, you know, there you go. Plus, if they're overpaid, I don't know how you can say that they're overpaid. And then usually that same person would probably say David Glass is cheap. So there's also that little gambit hanging out there. I mean,
it's a popular one.
Yeah, it is. Record payroll. Oh, he's cheap. Oh, they should put some money in here. Come on. Give me a break. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a disaster, but I do think that it's not a good contract anymore. But if he has a couple of good years, then yeah, I mean, you know, he had one really strong year like 2016. He can pretty much recoup that value right there, but he's got to be able to go out and do that too. So that's the dirty catch about it.
And I don't even really know that I had kind of made up my mind. It was just an interesting thought when I was coming into work. You know, if just because the value seems so wonky in baseball, where it's hard to kind of pin it down and put your finger on it. You know, is that really too much for a risk to have that Danny Duff to have the price tag that Danny Duffy has if you were going to trade for him or bring him onto your team? That's an interesting thought to peruse in the old noggin there.
Yeah, but I don't remember who it was. One last thing, just as you kind of mentioned that, like I don't remember who said that. It might have been Joe Sheehan or it might have been Dan Zimborski, both of whom are extremely popular with casual Royals fans on the internet. I don't know who it was, but they said that, like, if you're on the free agent market, you probably want to be on the extremes, either like going after like the highest priced guys who are probably going to be elite, or you want to try to patch it together by the guys down, you know, at the bottom, and, you know, try to find those good deals to get it together. You don't want to be like in the middle, which is kind of where the Royals ended up, where they gave Ian Kennedy, right, you know, what, 5 years and $70 million or whatever his contract is. So you don't want to be paying average players those big dollars. But yeah, I mean, in two more seasons, the contract that Duffy and Kennedy have probably won't look like that big of a deal, just because, you know, there's so much money in the game. And every year, if player X is getting $10 million and player Y becomes a free agent, they want to have more money than player X on their deal. So they might get $11 or $12 million, and then it just, player Z, a year or two later, it's the same thing. So it's just going to, you know, yeah, I mean, you're right. It does kind of inflate itself and get wonky, as you said. So, you know, in a couple of years, hey, maybe the deal doesn't look that bad at all, just because you might have, I don't know, some crazy players out there making $10, $12 million a year who have no, you know, real business making much.
An example that comes to mind, not necessarily in baseball, but with football, the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, a few years ago, they signed Dwayne Bowe to a big contract, and he was, if not the highest, one of the highest paid wide receivers in the league, but he definitely wasn't one of the best wide receivers in the league. And no. it was just a function of, he became a free agent at the right time. So he kind of, because of the deal he got, he kind of got that title of being one of the highest paid, or one of the highest paid, even though he may not have actually deserved it. So yeah, it kind of comes around like that. So there'll be, you know, pitchers worse than that sounds bad to say worse than Danny Duffy, but, you know, pitchers that are not as good as Danny Duffy that will be making as much or more money in a few years. And so, yeah, it won't look as bad. I agree with that. But we'll move on from Danny Duffy. Speaking of shutting down, we talked last week about the possibility going into roster expansions of Jorge Soler coming back, getting one of those roster spots. That will not happen. He will not return in 2018. So the great Jorge Soler experiment after the first 2 years is not off to a great start.
No.
And this is one of those things where, you know, if we have two opposite ends of the extreme for the same idea, it would be this, right, where process versus results. So if you go back to 2013, none of us, by that I mean you and I, and, you know, a lot of other people, were not happy about the Will Shields, I'm sorry, James Shields, Will Myers trade.
You got onto the Chiefs track.
Will Shields, of course, being the Hall of Fame tackle for the Chiefs. But the Will Myers, James Shields trade, okay, we disagreed with the process there, but the results were not debatable. James Shields was great. He helped a lot of the young players kind of mature, led them to a World Series appearance, and when he left, those players were able to carry on and win a title the next year. So can't argue with that. Plus, they got Wade Davis in the deal, who obviously we all know how big of a piece he was to that puzzle. But then at the same time, chugging right along with Wade Davis as part of that example, you know, we maligned the Royals a lot in the past before they had their nice little run where they won a title, of course, where Joaquin Soria specifically, you know, we said, why didn't the Royals trade him sooner? Why didn't they do something with him? Because having a closer, a really good closer like he was in the mid-2000s, was a luxury, and one that a losing team, which the Royals were, did not deserve to have. So they should have traded him and got something for him to speed up that process a little bit so they could help the rebuild. You know, it all ended up working out okay, but the process behind that was, we wanted them to do that differently. And so they did when it came to Wade Davis. And they traded him, and they got Jorge Soler for him. Now, So at the time, I was, I don't know if I would say I was necessarily a fan of the deal, but I wasn't like, okay, I hate this, like I did with the Will Myers, James Shields trade. I understood where they were coming from. I applauded the fact that they were trying to make some moves with an eye towards the future, even though they were still trying to compete that year. And, you know, you got to give them props for their due. If we say don't hold on to the closers too long because you never know, well, we can't fault them when they get rid of a closer, specifically when Wade Davis has not – he's underperformed since he left. So the Royals kind of got out while the getting was good, if you will, on that. Same with Greg Holland. And, you know, I guess that's not necessarily true because Greg Holland had a half season.
But they definitely got out the right time for Kelvin Herrera.
Exactly, Kelvin Herrera as well. So the HDH, they've had their struggles since leaving the Royals, but they had, you know, the Royals got their best years out of them. I think that's pretty clear right now. We can say that. So, you know, but unfortunately, where the Will Myers James Shields trade didn't like it, ended up working out greatly. The Wade Davis Jorge Soler trade, you know, kind of liked it. Doesn't look like it's ending. It doesn't look like right now the returns are not very good, and who knows where it's going to go in the future. So, you know, it's really unfortunate. There were some bright spots this season for Jorge Soler. I was excited to see what he could do with the full season and with the full season of at-bats, because that was one of the things that they said part of the reason his development stuttered in Chicago was because he wasn't getting those everyday at-bats. He wasn't that everyday player, and people thought, okay, if he's given that opportunity – then they would pay off. But you know, we were hoping to see that, and we saw a little bit of it, and then he got injured, and now he's done for the season. So it's unfortunate. I don't know. Again, this is another situation where it's easy when you have players that are young that you can look towards the future. You know, like your players in the minors and your kind of first or second year players right now. But when you've got a player like Jorge Soler and Danny Duffy and those veteran players, I don't know where my head is at when I think about Jorge Soler in 2019 for the Royals. What do I think? Obviously they're going to give him every shot, especially because he showed so much promise for a few small points this year. But you know, I don't know what I envision for him next season. That'll be a fun over under as we start next season for some Soler stats, probably games played, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it could be. He's got one season of more than 90 games played.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
It definitely is.
Yeah. And the most kind of frustrating thing about it was like, it's, you know, it was just kind of a freakish injury. You know, he fouled the ball off his foot, and it probably broke then, but I think he played another couple games. Like, they, you know, they said, oh, it's fine, he feels better, and then ended up, oh, yeah, it's broken. You know, maybe the swelling, you couldn't see it. Maybe the imaging wasn't right. I don't know. I don't know what happened. You know, he's still only going to be 27 next year. He's definitely showed a lot of the promise that we kind of thought he might have. I mean, from, you know, his rookie year in 24 games in 2014, he had a higher OPS, but otherwise this was really his best season. And, you know, unfortunately it was cut short, but you know, he looked every part of kind of the guy that you expected. And for like 3 weeks there, he was a monster. And so, you know, hopefully he can come back and be fine and do that. But like, that cloud's always going to hang over until he plays basically a full season. Kind of like Lorenzo Cain. Lorenzo Cain always had that kind of injury prone kind of problem. And then, you know, he finally played basically a whole year and it was fine. It's like, whatever. He's going to have to do that. But, you know, I think still, you know, you kind of mentioned the trade and the process and everything. Yeah, I was kind of in the same spot. I was like, I kind of felt like they could have gotten another piece at the time, but overall it was like, you could see what they were trying to do. They were trying to move some payroll, they were trying to cash in some assets, and they were trying to get affordable guys on with team control who could play right now. It's very kind of similar to how they approached the trade deadline this year. you know, they kind of took a very similar track. And, you know, just it hasn't worked out. You know, Soler has been either ineffective last season or got hurt this season, or Nate Karns is hardly – he pitched, what, 7 or 8 games total in the last 2 years? So
forget about Nate Karns.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, those two trades didn't really work, but they were geared towards that idea of, like, trading in guys who were going to be free agents to get, you know, players with 3-4 years of team control. So far, it hasn't really worked out completely, though. I do think that Soler next year will probably be DHing most of the time, so maybe that makes it a little bit easier for him to stay on the field or stay in the batter's box more appropriately. Because the Royals have 700 outfielders who can play at the big league level right now. So, you know, I think they're probably feeling like they're in a better spot to get something out of him next year. So long as no other nagging injuries or other problems pop up. So it kind of sucks that, you know, he had that setback and wasn't able to come back, just because I think it would have been interesting to kind of see how that lineup looks, you know, with him back in it, see if he can kind of get that rhythm back and maybe build on something for next year. But, you know, they're not going to have enough time to do it. So he ends the year still, you know, 9 homers. I think he had 12 homers 1 year. So still really kind of a weird line on him. But again, his career high for games played is 101. And other than that, he hasn't crossed 90. So that's kind of the goal for next year. You know, that's kind of what he's got to work towards. And it's too bad we don't get to see more of him. But, you know, the important thing is he gets fully healthy and they don't, you know, stress any part of his foot or his legs or anything. You know, for a team that's, what, 46 and 92, you know, it's like,
You know,
is it the worst thing in the world? No. Does it kind of suck from a selfish standpoint? Cause you kind of want to see, the lineup a little bit. Cause we've talked about how much more fun they are to watch, and you throw Soler in there and that adds some fun to it.
Well, plus, you know, and we kind of talked about it with, and we'll talk about it a little bit more here in a second, but, you know, with the likes of O'Hearn and Schwindel and guys like that, and, you know, Sully Matias a little bit further down the road, and Soler all in the mix within the next few years. You know, if the Royals really are looking for another window past 2020, then Jorge Soler has a chance to be a piece of that. And I guess technically he's only under contract until 2020, but, you know, cross that version, you come to it. Point being, he, you know, they need to see what they have with him. And if he's a piece that they can have for the next couple of years that they can depend on, or if they should just, you know, move along and give some of these other kids a chance.
Yep. And if he can't play, he also can't build any trade value if it turns out that they can't find a spot for him. So, yeah, very important for him. So, Soler, Duffy, they both need to be healthy next year. That's a good goal for them. But, yeah, the rest of 2018, yep, just going to miss out. It's a bummer. Yes.
So, as I kind of segued into, we can talk now on Ryan O'Hearn, who, you know, we weren't really sure about him, and at least in terms of what he would do. He'd shown some flashes in the minor leagues of being a possible solid player, and there are some people that really kind of took a liking to him the last couple of years, and it remained to be seen how well he would do. But, you know, he's been up, he's played 25 games for the Royals, and all he's done is just mash. He's done really well. And it was funny because I went to the zoo this past weekend with my my wife and daughter, and then my parents came along, and they went to the game the night before when Whit Merrifield had the walk-off against the Orioles. And so we were just talking about the Royals, and my mom said her new favorite player is Ryan O'Hearn. So
there you go.
He's got that going for it. Ryan, if you're listening, you're my mom's new favorite player. Now, but that's another one of those things. You know, again, it's only 25 games, and if we were at the start of a season, of course, we would say 25 games is not enough for not a large enough sample size to make any sort of an assessment. But like we would say then as well, it's nice to have indicators that, hey, things are pointing in the right direction. And he's doing really well right now. He's got a 960 OPS, a 156 OPS plus in those 25 games, 9 home runs. I mean, he's really I've been surprised to see how well he's done. And again, always the caveat, short sample size, of course. So, I'm excited for the Royals to give him a lot of starts the rest of the way, to see if he can kind of finish out the season as strongly as he's performed the last few weeks. And it's something where, just as you mentioned and that we've talked about previously on the show, he's one of those players where when you talk about, okay, season's lost, losing season, what is there to look forward to as a Royals fan? What is there to watch? Well, players like this, this is when it starts to get fun. Even though they're losing so much, you see players like this that come up and they're energetic and they're playing well and they're playing hard. And, you know, it's actually kind of translated into a few wins recently. The Royals, we talked last week about the impending race to the bottom series with the Orioles, and they swept the Orioles. So It's pretty clear now that the Royals will not be getting the first pick in the draft, although it's pretty clear also that they will be getting the second one.
Right.
But this is where it's crossed over. You know, I've actually had some remarks from a couple people recently that they are a lot more fun to watch now than they were at the beginning of the season. The pressure's off. There's no expectations. We get to see these young kids. It's kind of fun. So, you know, Ryan O'Hearn's been another one of those pretty good stories that I hope he continues to do well, and I hope he turns into a player that the Royals can use.
Yeah, the power is really, really interesting because he's going to all fields, center field, left field. Really good pull power. He had a triple yesterday, I think, I think it was the left center. I didn't get to see the game, but or maybe it was today. I don't know. Didn't get to see today's game either because, well, I had to work. But, you know, when you look at what he did in the minors, he had 95 homers and 558 games in the minors, including 27 between A-ball and Double-A back in high A and low A in 2015. So, he's got a track record of having a lot of power and a pretty okay on base percentage and things like that. And for a while there, all he was doing was hitting homers, but he's starting to get a few more hits here and there. So his numbers overall look really, really good. He's getting a homer about every 10 at bats. So, I mean, that's not sustainable by any stretch. But, you know, one of the things that he's kind of doing is when he's getting the pitch that he can drive, he's doing so. And the Royals haven't always had those guys. Like, they've had, you know, Moustakas and Hosmer and Kane. Yeah, but there's so many times where you see, you know, Alex Gordon did this a lot, you know, even in his good years, where he'd kind of get that 3-1 and didn't quite get it, you know, didn't quite punish the pitch that was asking for it. And O'Hearn's been doing that. Now, can he continue to do that? Maybe not. It's only 26 games. It's definitely encouraging. You want to see it over a full season. But he surprised me. I mean, I kind of, you know, you look at what he did in the minors, last year, not the best numbers. Like, not bad, but, like, for someone that was starting to draw a lot of hype in 2015, didn't really build on it quite like you'd want to see to where, like, you're really blowing it up. And, didn't really jump off the page that much. Was left unprotected in the Rule 5 draft, was not selected. He's interesting to watch. He's fun to watch. And, you know, the Royals kind of picked him early, you know, well before the September call-ups. Gave him a chance to get his feet wet. He always had really good exit velocity, you know, recently in the minors. So that's, I think Clint Scholes kind of referred to that as a big reason why they wanted to get him up here. A reason why they haven't brought up Frank Schwindel, because, you know, he hasn't hit the ball as hard consistently. But O'Hearn has done so, and he's continuing to do so. at the big league level, and you know, 23 RBIs in 26 games. I mean, that's like, it's like Juan Gonzalez in 1993 kind of stuff.
Yeah,
like, that's crazy. So yeah, really, really encouraging to see him. And Hunter Dozier's hit really, really well over the last couple of weeks. Adalberto Mondesi's been pretty good. Whit Merrifield's been good all year. So you get all those guys, and that's a pretty fun little group. Even like Alex Gordon has not been great, but you know, he's basically kind of been holding serve and has accidentally hit a few homers out, and he's able to get on base. And so it's just like, you know, you get that one through four is kind of fun to watch. And, you know, it kind of gives you a little bit of hope about in the next couple of years that, hey, maybe you've got your four and five hitter of the future in O'Hearn and Dozier, and you can kind of start to build around that. Maybe you don't. You know, maybe it's still going to be Nick Prado as the guy on the scorecard when the Royals win their next playoff game. But O'Hearn's definitely making a case to kind of carve out that spot, and maybe, you know, not so fast on a guy like Nick Prado or whomever. So it's good to see. It's good to see those guys come up and kind of tear through the league right away, because so often they haven't. So that's also fun and encouraging to kind of see for a change is a guy come up and just really crush. And lately, I mean, 644 slugging percentage. That's silly.
Yeah,
that's a higher slugging percentage than Brett Phillips' OPS. And I like Brett Phillips, but it's higher than his OPS. It's higher than Chester Cuthbert's OPS.
Facts are facts.
It's higher than Alcides Escobar's OPS. It's really close to Alex Gordon's OPS. I mean, I love Alex Gordon, but that's really close. And it's probably not going to last there because there's 24 games left. And, you know, he could just as easily really struggle over the next 24 and finish with a weird 50-game sample. But, you know, he's doing really well right now. And to come up and probably have 10 homers, you know, within about 30 games, it's pretty good. Pretty good way to introduce yourself to the big leagues.
Yeah, and when you're 46-92 as a team, which the Royals are, then that's when it makes it a little bit more fun to actually watch. So, but you mentioned Whit Merrifield, and man, I still feel bad that he didn't get the All-Star nod. He absolutely should have gotten it. And if anything, I mean, the rest of the season has proven even further that he should have gotten the All-Star nod for that. I mean, he's just having a fantastic season. He's got 30 stolen bases again for the second consecutive year. I don't know where that ranks in the American League. I know it's up near the top, he led the league last year. So, I mean, he's having another great season. He's got a .306 batting average, an .812 OPS. I mean, he's got 11 home runs. He'll probably hit a couple more, you think, by the end of the year. So, you know, his power has come around a little bit more than, I mean, most people were probably thinking he wasn't much more than a 10 home run guy, but he's now proving himself to be more like a 15 home run guy. And that's pretty nice. And he's, you know, I mean, all he's done is have success since he's been up in the majors. He had a little bit of a slump a couple years ago that I think kind of made people think, oh, well, maybe it was just a hot streak that because he was new and people figured him out. But no, he's consistently gotten better every year that he's been in the major leagues, and it's really shown. And he's been incredibly fun to watch all year. He's been the Royals' best player all year. I feel super bad that he didn't get that All-Star game. Yeah. I'm almost certain he'll get the Royals team MVP award. So I guess, you know, for whatever that's worth, but
about $3.
Yeah.
Give or take.
As we talk about trying to make the Royals fun to watch and some of these young players, Whit Merrifield is a guy who's been here all year and he's been fun to watch. So it's really great to see. It's one of those stories that kind of gives you the old warm fuzzies, if you will, because I'm just really happy to see a guy like Whit Merrifield who very clearly has put in the work, put in the time, seems like a pretty decent guy. He deserves it. And he's got the success. So good for him. It's been fun to watch him develop these last couple of years.
Yep. He is currently tied with D. Gordon for the American League lead in stolen bases. So
there you go.
He's right up there. He's five behind Trey Turner, who leads in the National League. So,
yeah. Well, still, which, you know, not a busy bad. Week, and he might be able to get pretty close.
Yeah, he's got the highest average and on base of any of those guys. So
there you go.
That's
yeah, he's on base. I mean, a 372 on base percentage. For
yeah, he figured out how to walk.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 52 walks on. That's got to lead. That's got to be best for the Royals in like the last 15 years.
I didn't think
about that, but that's a good thing. We should look. We'll look that up, and we'll talk about it next show.
I'm looking at it right now, and I have the answer.
Ruin it.
Season's not over.
You want it?
But definitely, yeah, like Eric Hosmer in 2016 led with 57. Hosmer led with 66 last year. 2015, 61 by Hosmer led the team. So, I mean, he could do it. He could definitely get up there.
Yeah.
66 might be out of the question, but, I mean, he can get to 60 and kind of cross that threshold. So, you know, for everything else that he does, it's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, other news for the week, Drew Butera was traded.
Yeah.
So some fans are really upset about this. Mike, how upset were you when you heard the soul-crushing news that Drew Butera was traded?
I was not. I just wasn't.
If you couldn't detect my seeping sarcasm there.
Yeah.
Listeners out there.
Ryan Goins had a higher OPS than Drew Butera this year. Remember Ryan Goins?
I do, unfortunately.
Barely. I mean, he had a couple of years in there where he was all right. And, you know, of course, he had that at bat in that game four against Houston that was huge. Caught the last strike of 2015. And that's a very cool little moment. But, you know, he's never been a very good hitter, and you know that kind of works when you're Sal Perez's backup because it's like the Maytag man. You know, you don't have to do anything most of the time, but he's also been called into action. You know, this April Sal was hurt. He ended up, you know, didn't hit very well. Hasn't hit very well all year, and it's just like, you know, he is what he is. He's a backup catcher. Players liked him. But ultimately, you know, the Royals are going to get a look at Cam Gallagher and see what he can do. He is probably definitely ready to be a backup full-time in the big leagues now anyway. So the Rockies wanted Drew Butera, so the Royals traded him. They got Jerry Vasto. They actually got a player for him.
Kind of a considerations third cousin was not traded this time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, not that Vasta is like a huge, huge name, but yeah, he's got a little bit of something. He's, you know, got a decent little minor league record, 3.16 ERA in AAA for the Rockies, 37 innings, but struck out more than a batter per inning out there. Lefty doesn't necessarily have to be a lefty one out guy. So, you know, it's not like a huge name, but it's another
good
option.
Good filler guy, you know?
Yeah. It's like, all right. He's someone who can be up, fill out the bullpen, another lefty arm. All right. So he's pitched one inning already with the Royals and I think it was a 1-2-3 inning. So that's good, but
boom, get him up here.
Yeah. Yeah, but Drew Butera, not really, truly, mostly indifferent to it, you know?
I mean,
I have my differences with Drew Butera off the field.
Yes.
Not personally, but just like, you know, we're in very different ends of the political spectrum, for instance.
Right.
You know, whatever. I'm glad he had his moment in 2015, and that's about it. So,
yeah. You know, I agree with pretty much most of that. And there's, you know, he wasn't a part of the future of this team. So if you can get anything for him, even if it was just cash considerations, cash it in. Yep. When it comes to Drew Butera, I mean, he never proved himself to be anything more than just a decent. He wasn't even like, hey, he's the best backup catcher in the league. He was just kind of decent. He's the Chase Daniel of Major League Baseball, which you know, makes a good living. He's had a long career. He's made a lot of money, but it's you know, again, I also off the field. If when it comes to following Drew Butera's Twitter account or something like that, I'm definitely with you that I am not a fan. But you know, as a baseball player, he was perfectly fine for a backup catcher, which is what he was. And now he's gone. So here's what it is.
A Rocky.
Yes. Have fun in Colorado.
Yeah.
And other news of the day, the Royals, and I have not had a ton of time to research this, but the Royals have acquired Ben Lively today.
Ben Lively. That's all I can think of. Like, I kind of love the name.
I know, right?
In the phone book, and I did this with Mike Broadway earlier in the spring, but in the phone book, look it up, kids, it would be Lively Ben.
Lively Ben.
Lively Ben, so, and the Merry Men of Sherwood Forest.
Though our expert, Clint Scholes, has stated that he is, in fact, not all that lively. So no. Don't get your hopes up too much, at least in terms of his baseball skill. So don't get your hopes too much about what he could be. But all the same, he was acquired, so it's worth mentioning. I haven't had a ton of time to look into him as a player, but...
No,
there it is.
Fastball slider guy, 92. He's, you know, got a decent strikeout rate, not much of a walk rate. Gives up a bunch of homers, but doesn't walk too many. He's really only been a starter with the Phillies, 20 starts in his big league career between this year and last year. You know, it's a dart throw. You know, the Royals are in a position to just, hey, if someone's out there, snatch him up, see if you can get anything from him. They did the same thing with Eni Romero. Earlier this year, was that his name? He was only around for like three games and he was really bad. But it was the same thing. It's like, see what you can get. If they don't pan out, yeah, well, you can dump them pretty easily. And that's pretty much probably what they'll be doing with Ben Lively, who I'd like the name. I think there's a...
Hey, small victories.
In Braveheart, I think maybe there's a brief little point. This is the dumbest, most obscure pop culture reference I could ever make, but I think someone, the queen is showing up or someone, and one of the little, like the speaking extras, the guy got his SAG card for this. It's like, look lively, Sergeant. So that's what I think of when I think of, of Ben Lively. That's where the, yeah. Anyway, but back to baseball.
Well, back to baseball.
Yeah.
So that's kind of it. What I mean, is there anything else that we missed that we have to talk about?
The only main thing is we should own up to being very wrong about guessing the call-ups, because we were very wrong. In our defense,
we were very wrong.
Everybody's been very wrong also, because Frank Schwindel, yes, did not get called up. He did require a 40-man move. So the 40-man roster is full now. They, you know, they had to designate Eric Stout for assignment to pick up Lively, which is kind of interesting, because kind of the justification for not calling up Schwindel or Josh Staumont was, well, where are we going to put him? Where are we going to play him? We have to make a move for it. But then they made a move for Ben Lively. So I don't know, you know, whatever. Kind of seems like they feel like Schwindel would not get drafted. Though, or in the Rule 5 draft, that is, which I maybe, but I also kind of feel like maybe next year he's got another solid year of minor league production. It might make a team a little more likely to try to get him, and maybe that's a missed opportunity for the Royals. Maybe it's not. I don't know. And they can still add him in November. You know, it's not like they didn't add him this time, so he's never going to be added. It's just that this time they didn't choose to, when he's clearly had a very good season in the minor leagues. So we were wrong about that, and Richard Lovelady didn't get called up either. They did reactivate Eric Skoglund from the DL, who I thought was shut down, but they're going to get another look at him. So I guess that's a thing. Jerry Vasto came up. He was in Omaha for a little bit, but obviously came up and made his appearance. And Glenn Sparkman came up, who was pretty much expected. He'd only been sent down just kind of to make space for some other guys, and he'll be back up. They will probably, with Duffy shut down, get a chance to look at him as a starter, along with everybody else. So they had a really good run over the last like week or so of starting pitching. Brad Keller pitched well today, though he took the loss. Jake Junis looked good the other day. Heath Fehlmeyer has been pretty good. So they're getting some performance out of some of these guys, and you know, get a chance to take a look at a couple of others. So that's cool.
And you know, that's really encouraging to me, because especially when you look at these young players, you know, like a Brad Keller, who was a virtual unknown going into the season, beyond the fact that he was a Rule 5 pick. Yeah. And has had such success. And the trick always is, and we talked about this numerous times over the years, on the show, you know, you come up, you're new, you have some success, people haven't seen you, they get some tape on you, get some film, review it, figure out how to attack you, and then, you know, if you're really good, they still can't figure it out, but typically they figure something out, and then you have to adapt to that, and then it's a constant struggle for the rest of your career. And everyone who can do this, who can adapt to the adaption, if you will, they become really good players. So Brad Keller, Heath Fehlmeyer, those guys, they've had their struggles this season. They started out having some decent success, had their struggles, and then now we're kind of seeing them have a little bit of success again, like I mentioned. So to me, that's really encouraging to see that, specifically with someone like a Brad Keller, just because he's been so good. And he did have, you know, kind of a rough month there. And seeing, you know, Heath Fehlmeyer and Jake Junis have kind of bounced back a little bit, that's super encouraging to me. I like to see that. And again, goes more towards that, you know, some things that are actually fun to watch, and that portend pretty well for the future, because all those guys, if they do turn out to be capable major league players, can and will be here for a while.
Yeah, and the thing with Keller is just that, like, he pitched well out of the bullpen right away, and then they put him in the rotation. The thing was, well, now he's in the rotation, watch, he'll start to regress. Okay, well, that didn't happen. Didn't happen at all. And then after he had some success as a starter, it was like, okay, well, they're going to figure him out. He'll start to regress. And then that didn't happen either. And then it just kind of continued. He's given up more homers in the second half of the season, but he's given up 7 total homers in 120 innings. That's pretty good.
That's not bad at all.
I don't know if I need to tell you, but that's pretty good. His strikeout to walk ratio is nearly doubled in the second half as a starter. One of the things that kind of pointed to that potential regression, which is not an incorrect assumption, but he wasn't striking out a lot of batters. He was maybe 4.5 batters per 9 innings, give or take. Now he's striking out, he's got 40 strikeouts in 50 innings in the second half, not counting today, but a much better ratio. So I think it was 7.2 per 9 innings. It's, you know, that's perfectly reasonable for a guy, especially someone with like him who can get so many ground balls and keeps the ball in the park and limits walks. So that's very encouraging. I also think it's funny that, like, it's not like Mike Montgomery and John Lamb and Chris Dwyer who are coming up as rookies and showing up. It's Brad Keller and Heath Fehlmeyer, and that's just weird. It's weird to kind of think about the guys who are actually performing compared to the guys who never actually came up really for the Royals, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, very encouraging for Keller. He's the pitcher of the year, frankly. I mean,
yeah.
He's been their best pitcher all year, and he's been good pretty much all year. So, there's not a lot of other options, unfortunately. But you know, he's definitely earned it. He's pitching really, really well, and it's really, really nice to kind of see, especially for just a free player. He's a Rule 5 guy. Great. That's an awesome little dart throw for him.
Yeah, another one of those great stories. So I hope he continues to have success, you know, and same with Jacob Junis. You know, we saw a little bit of that last year, but hopefully he has some success as well, or he continues to have success as well, because it's fun to see guys like that, you know, who kind of come out of nowhere. And, you know, maybe you thought they were going to be a little something and they turn into a lot of something, or maybe you didn't know them at all. And then all of a sudden here they are, like you're like a Brad Keller, and it's awesome. That's where it's really fun. You know, it's great to see your Eric Hosmers who are heralded from day one come in and have success and be big time players. Like, that's great too. But, you know, it's expected. You hope that's what's going to happen when you draft Eric Hosmer, but it's a different kind of surprise and a different kind of awesome when you do get truly surprised like that with baseball. That's always fun to me, seeing those guys like Greg Holland. You know, I mean, he was just a guy, and, you know, he was a 10th round pick, and nobody really thought, thought maybe he'd be some relief help, and didn't imagine he'd be one of the best closers in the league for a couple year period, but he was. That was fun. You know, so whatever Brad Keller turns into, if he hopefully, you know, he can keep that going. Same with Jacob Junis, and be some pretty good major league players. That's because that too will be fun to see that happen. So
the only other thing that we haven't really covered was the surprise of those call-ups, which was Mabrys Viloria, who, when they traded Butera, they didn't have another catcher and they weren't going to add one to the 40-man roster. So Sal Perez has a little banged up thumb, so they wanted to give him a little bit of time off, and so they called it Viloria, and he doubled in his first game. So guy from A-ball came all the way up to Kansas City, kind of looked the part. You know, it's a couple games. I mean, he's hitting like 167 now because he's, you know, he only got that one hit, I believe, but you know, still. You know, he drew a walk and had an RBI double in his first major league game. It's not bad.
There you go.
Not bad. So
take that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For a guy that I did not expect to see for a couple of years. He's up. He'll get this month. And, you know, I don't know, probably give him a good shot at double A next year. So interesting story. Surprise. Biggest surprise of the September call-ups. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's that's what they're doing. So maybe they'll have another surprise. Probably not. It sure sounds like they're pretty set at what they want to do, and they'll get their rotation of Dozier and O'Hearn and Bonifacio and make sure to get those guys their playing time. But, you know, in between there, you get Mabrys Viloria and, Ben Lively up and see what you can get from them. So, yeah. Yeah, interesting month. The Royals have to go 17-7 to avoid 100 losses. Probably not going to avoid 100 losses, but
nope.
At this point, doesn't really matter that much. It's all about seeing who can play at this level, who has something to kind of build off of next year, and go from there, and see what the winter holds.
And you know, regardless of whether you think the process will work again this time with Dayton Moore and what he's doing. And maybe this is just still some lingering positivity from winning a World Series, but it at least feels like there's a purpose to the losing. And that's kind of weird to say, but, you know, they're figuring things out. They're finding things. They're flipping people for other prospects, et cetera, you know, as opposed to that 15-year stretch from 2000 to 2015, basically, where it was just kind of aimless. So it wasn't quite that long. You know, the more that whole decade of the first decade of the 2000s, where nobody really knew what the hell they were doing, and didn't really seem like they knew what they were doing, and it didn't seem like they were doing anything. So, you know, now it at least, again, regardless of whether people agree with the direction or not, you can see a direction, and that's at least a little bit encouraging. And to see some of these players come up and have some success, that's, you know, makes it even more encouraging that, you know, these aren't even the guys that they're expecting to be the core. You know, with the exception of Mondesi, these guys are all just kind of the extra players. You know, the big guys that they hope are going to be the true future. And those guys are still to come. So you know, if this continues with guys like O'Hearn and Brad Keller and Jacob Junis and stuff, when the rest of those guys, like you mentioned, Prado and, you know, all those guys get here, then, hey, that's pretty cool. That could be, that could turn into a good team, you know, and honestly, if they really want to make a push in the next few years, it has to happen. They have to continue being good, and they have to not, mm-hmm. you know, turn into not just serviceable major league players, but good major league players in order to make this thing happen. So, you know, just like we talked about Luke Hochaver, and we talked about him after he announced his retirement a couple weeks ago. And, you know, granted, he had the high expectations, but had he not turned into at least a good player, then who knows what would have happened in 2015, because he was a big piece of that playoff run. So they need these players to be good if they want to be good in the future. You know, not only that, but it's a good story and it's fun to watch. So,
yep. And on that note, the Lexington Legends in low A won a playoff game today behind Jackson Cower,
hey.
The Royals' second pick in the
2018 draft pick.
Yep. So good, nice step there.
Yes, that's always fun to see.
Yeah. Because,
you know, it back when this all started leading up to 2015, you know, it was all those guys, the Hosmers and Mooses and everyone else in the world, in those low levels starting to win playoffs, championships, etc. So, you know, the more that stuff starts to happen doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win a World Series again, but it's good. It's good to see them winning at all levels.
Indeed. So, yeah, we'll see what comes of it from there.
Yep. So with that, I think we'll leave it for this week. We will be back next week again to talk about more Royals. Hopefully they'll have some more fun stuff to talk about. We'll have more stories emerge, hopefully. Did you have some?
I did not. I am
okay,
out of
sorry.
Things.
I heard a little something in my headphones. I didn't know if you were trying to say something, but
oh,
anyway,
no, it's probably just the wind.
Probably just the wind. It's a common
that
common
damn
affect
wind.
Show. Damn wind again. But so we'll be back next week.
It's like a 4-year reference.
Yes, I know. Those longtime fans will know what we're talking about. But we'll be
both
back
of
next
them.
Week. Yeah, both. That's right. So to both Michael and I's parents, I hope you guys remember. But anyway, we'll be back next week. And if you get more of that Royals itch, you want to hear a little bit more about players like Ben Lively, who we didn't have enough time to necessarily go super deep into this week, then go ahead and head on over to our sponsor, BP Kansas City. Of course, they do a fantastic job. They've got a big write-up on him. They've got write-ups on all the new players as they come in, and on top of just all the great content about the team at large. So be sure to go there. And if you want to watch the last, you know, month or so of the Royals, no better place to do it than our longtime sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. And they've supported us so that we can give content to you. So please, we ask that you support them because they're awesome, number one, and because they've been such a long time great partner of the show. So with that, I think we'll leave you. And I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back next week. We will see you then. And until next time, as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.